Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour. This is for October 25th, 2018, and many topics to cover tonight, including a new comet that is going to come really, really close to Earth during Christmas time. They say it's little, but we are going to be inside of its Debye shielding coma. So I'll explain what that means in a few minutes. Well, does that mean imminent disaster? Well, I don't think so. It's a relatively small comet, but this thing is coming very close, 11.5 million kilometers. Now, if we take the distance to the moon, then we'll talk about this in terms of lunar distances. So, at any rate, that's interesting. And then also, I've been talking about Comet K2, just a quick mention on that tonight. But first of all, I want to start off with an apology. I have missed quite a few shows, actually two shows in the past. I missed the October 4th show. I did do an October 11th show, and then the 18th I missed. I also missed quite a few shows with my weekly interview with John Moore. I missed my monthly interview with the Power Hour with Daniel Brigman, etc. And so what's going on? Well, it turns out that I was in the heat of the finals of the Water Abundance X Prize, which I believe most of you knew I was involved in. That was a year and a half project. And I have to admit that it was just a very stringent, very difficult project. And I came out very successful. Of 98 teams that began this process a couple years ago, I was down to the final two. And so I'll explain a little bit what happened. And as I am told by people that would know in the XPRIZE world, actually I had a technical difficulty. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail here. But as you know, my wing generator was the energy source. I have my own personal line of water machines. They're called atmospheric water generators. They extract water from the air. And I was using two of my 1,000 liter per day models. And so hopefully with a little bit of time as I get back to normal here, I'll have photos of these, etc., on my webpage. But the JMCC Wing LLC, that's the company name, atmospheric water generators, go from 70 liters per day up to 20,000 liters per day. Those are the models. And I was using two of the 1,000 liter per day models. So let me just, first of all, define for those of you not totally familiar with the XPRIZE requirement, and let me just mention something about XPRIZE in general. The very first XPRIZE was known as the Ansari XPRIZE. It was initiated by a man named Peter Diamantis, and he basically defined the prize to the requirement being to design a spacecraft where three people, not one, not two, but three people would go into outer space up to the limit of space, which is 60 miles up or 100 kilometers. That's considered the edge of space. To get beyond that barrier, come back down safely, and then with the same spacecraft, go up and do it again within a seven-day period. Thought to be absolutely beyond the realm of possibility because of our history seeing NASA. It was months and months and months between space shuttle launches and back in the Apollo days between Apollo launches. Of course, the Russians were launching on a daily basis, but not with the same vehicle. Well, actually, that is not exactly true. They had their little Cosmos carrier, and so in a sense, but then again, the XPRIZE is for individuals, not government entities. Or corporate whatever. You know, the idea is that This should be done by individuals and spur innovation. So the Ansari X Prize was won by Bert Rutan. He started the effort, and then Richard Branson came along about midway, somewhere in the middle of that effort, and threw in a chunk of money, probably to the tune, I think, this, don't quote me on this, but I think it was about $7 million, to complete the effort of Bert Rutan out in the Mojave Desert with Scaled Composites was the company name of Bert Rutan. I met Bert Rutan in, I think it was around 1985, I don't remember the exact year, at the Aerospace America air show out in San Diego. San Diego was trying to do a Paris air show type of event and establish that an air show in the United States for military show and tell, but also commercial. And so Bert Rutan was there, and I met him with his wife. And he's a tall guy. He was wearing cowboy boots, had long sideburns, and Bert Rutan, if you see a picture of him. But this is back in the kind of the early 80s. So, and I just met him, not a big thing, and I suggested that we work together because I was myself out in the Los Angeles area looking for funding for my space science projects. So anyway, that was the Ansari X Prize, won by Bert Rutan, funded by Richard Branson, which led into the Virgin Galactic branch of Virgin, which is Richard Branson's trade name for all of his different companies, Virgin Airlines, Virgin America, Virgin Caribbean, all the different, the Virgin label of records. So Richard Branson, millionaire or billionaire from England. And so they continued on, and this led to people, other billionaires like Elon Musk and Bezos and the whole laundry list of other people who put hotels into space, are experimenting, spending their money, trying for innovation. So the end result was innovation, and brought about a billion-dollar-a-year industry in outer space, private space. And so that is the purpose of the XPRIZE. Number one, to do the impossible. Making possible the impossible is their slogan. And secondly, to bring about these industries that did not exist before. So now there are many XPRIZEs that are floating around. And they are approved by a committee within XPRIZE, and then they go out and they find funding for these. And one of them came along. It was called the Water Abundance XPRIZE, and this began a couple years ago. And I saw this, and I just kind of flashed on the screen, and I looked at it, and I thought, I could put, because I had just working around this industry because of my water filter industry, my water filter business, the JMCC water filters. I had already moved into the large commercial end water filters, water filter systems. And the next logical step would be the water machines that actually extract water from the air. So I developed my own product line. Now I have the by far the most advanced water extractors on the market, and then with filtration systems. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail on that. And then plus, of course, the wing generator, which was coming along. So the requirement of the Water Abundance XPRIZE was to extract at least a minimum of 2,000 liters per day with a machine that was powered with a natural source of energy, a renewable, that's the term that they use. So a renewable source of energy, extracting at least 2,000 liters of water from the air, and for a cost of less than 2 cents a liter. And the way you get to the cost is it's an amortization process, that all of the cost of your equipment, the hardware, so to speak, plus any maintenance, plus any labor that might be required over a 10-year period, all of the costs would have to come in under $146,000, producing 2,000 liters per day of water. And that is the thing that was the basically the show breaker right there. That was the thing, because many companies out there had already invested in atmospheric water machines. I was one of the more recent entries. Some of those went back 10 or 12 years that had machines that would extract water from the air. But the question was, where do you get a power source? And let me just explain this a little bit. If you tried to use solar panels, the two big alternative methods would be solar panels and wind. But the other requirement, that this had to be able to be placed any place in the world. You know, basically within, of course, temperate, between the Tropic of Cancer and the temperate and tropical zones of the world. It was basically, in fact, mine was able to produce water in cold regions also. It could take ice and melt it. So at any rate, let me just continue on with the requirements of the Water Abundance XPRIZE. The idea that you had to do this with a natural source of energy, the fact is that if you tried to do it with solar panels or three-blade wind generators, just the cost of the energy alone was far more than the $146,000. And so if you calculated the price of solar panels for the time that sun was shining per day, given optimal conditions, in this industry standard for solar panels, it's 4 solar hours per day. That's where you would get a maximum output of energy from your solar panels for 4 hours a day. And that includes evening, afternoon, morning, etc. 4 solar hours per day is the industry average. So what do you do with the other 20 hours? Well, you need 6 times as many solar panels to then collect the energy and store it into batteries, so that would then run your water machine through those other 20 hours of the day. And when you add all of that up, it comes out to close to $500,000, certainly way over the $146,000 cap of the XPRIZE, of the Water Abundance XPRIZE. If you tried to take a three-blade wind generator, given the response curve to the wind, given its energy output, etc., which is about 20% of its nameplate value. So if you bought a quarter million watt, 250,000 watt, or 250 kilowatt wind generator, three-blade wind generator, then you would need the batteries. And the cost on that would be close to $400,000 or $500,000 also. So they knew in the XPRIZE, the staff in the XPRIZE, that you could not do this with off-the-shelf energy. So this was not just a water extraction process, because a lot of companies would be able to get 2,000 liters a day, but with a lot of energy. These machines are very energy intensive. They consume a tremendous amount of energy to get the water out of the air. Basically, they're giant dehumidifiers, if you want to think of it that way. But some of the companies have very rudimentary machines. My particular machines are very advanced, have a lot of control electronics, etc. That, you know, it's too complicated to talk about now, the actual machines. But just suffice to say that they are very energy intensive. So you need a lot of energy. For the XPRIZE, you would need it from a natural source of energy, so enter the wing generator. So I entered the XPRIZE. I entered and put in my bid for the solution. Ultimately, 98 teams applied around the world, from all over the world. I don't know how many countries, but there was a very good representation of teams from all over the world. And so, at any rate, my solution, then we all had to build a prototype. So that was something that had to be completed by last February. And so I did that. I built the wing generator. You can probably see pictures and videos of this. And then also to drive a water machine, just a proof of concept. My solution, one of five, was chosen as a finalist. In other words, now the gloves were off. Out of the 98 teams, five were left, and I was one of them. JMCC Wing was my team name, after JMCC Wing LLC, the company name, and jmccwing.com is the webpage, etc. So I had this whole new division, so to speak, of my work dealing with energy and water, atmospheric water. Okay, so now I'm a finalist, and now the real work begins, because I have to build, in 4 months, I have to build a full-scale working model that's manufacturing ready. Now, if you can imagine a large corporation like, you know, General Electric or Siemens or IBM or any other big corporation, just imagine, trying to do something in 4 months, they wouldn't even have the paperwork done in 4 months. They wouldn't even have the corporate decision to do the paperwork done in 4 months. So, you know, little old me by myself. And so anyway, I mustered up my resources. There were a lot of things I had to do in the background. And, you know, not only physically, but financially. So I put this together and within the allotted time got everything ready. And just as the final testing was about to begin, the hurricane started coming. And of course, as many of you know, I was stationed my test site in Hawaii. Well, we had two hurricanes, and of course, earlier in the year, the volcano was going off. So what's the probability that you're going to have a full-blown volcano going off and two hurricanes in the same four-month period? In all of history, it had never happened before, but of course, it did when I was trying to get this together. So ultimately, to make a long story short, through much difficulty and difficulty, I was able to stage my equipment and present it to the judging staff when they finally came. And so that's why I was not available for a bit of time here, especially in October here. And I probably missed some shows with John Moore back in September also. I was day and night on this for this period of time because the purse was just $1.5 million. And I knew I could win it. As we got down to final judging, all four of the other teams dropped out. They couldn't make it. They couldn't perform. They couldn't make it to the finish line. And in that late time frame, another team was allowed to enter as a finalist. And so I'll just, these are just facts and information to of what happened in the final stages. So in the last weeks, there are two teams left. My team, JMCC Wing, with the wing generator powering the water machines and all of the electronics, of course, that go with that. The wing generator generates electricity, but all the equipment that goes with that, it's a healthy set of equipment. And this was, by the way, the 50 kilowatt wing generator version. The 10 kilowatt is what I used for the phase one testing that was back in February. Okay, so now I have two wing generator models that are up and running, visibly working. And of course, I'm working towards productizing all of this equipment. And the beauty of my solution was that you could put this into a container, move it to any point in the world, open up the container, roll out the wing generator, set it up. Within a couple days, you have electricity and water at any point in the world without any infrastructure. and for a very reasonable price. I came in way under the cost requirement, the cost gap of $146,000. I was way under that, and I could run up to three of my water machines with the 50 kilowatt wing generator. Okay, so anyway, the testing period came, the hurricanes cleared out, I got my testing done, and wouldn't you know, the week of testing, there was basically a fault in one of the pieces of electronics. It's a set of very complicated electronics that control the flow of electrical energy from the wing into the storage bank and then into the to convert it into electricity. High voltage, just to give you an idea, it's something my equipment is unheard of in the Western Hemisphere. 480 volt AC, three-phase output power. Just by comparison, if you go to a alternative energy shop with solar or wind or something like that, the most you're going to find for an inverter is 12 or 24 volt power pack and maybe 120 volt AC or 220 volt AC single phase. That's the most you're going to find in the United States. My equipment dwarfs that. It's high voltage in the 400 to 600 volt range. Output power to power the equipment, or if this is put in a site, a facility, is industrial grade power, 480 volt AC, three phase, and I can make these to any international standard. So advanced equipment, and I had a failure in one of the PC boards, one of the control boards failed, of course, during the week of testing. And so ultimately, the wing generator was blocked from powering the water machines. And so I'm not going to go into all the details of the workaround that was performed, but essentially the judges did not allow the workaround. And so for that reason, if it were not for that, I would have won the X Prize, the Water Abundance X Prize. And that I was told hands down. I will give you a little background on the team that won. This was the team that came in relatively late in the competition, in the finals. But they had a biodegasification furnace where they burned wood chips. And so they burned wood chips. The exhaust from the bio furnace went into a closed container, and that is where they extracted the water from the biodegasification exhaust. And they did not extract water from the air. So there was a question amongst the judges if that actually qualified for the X Prize, Water Abundance X Prize requirements, because they did not extract water from the air. It was from a biodegasification furnace process. Anyway, as it turned out, I believe it was a very close vote amongst the judges, an independent panel of judges, and they voted that the other team won. And so that's the end result. But I was I don't consider myself at all, say, a loser out of 98 teams to be second, but I did win, and I was awarded the X Prize Annual Technical Achievement Award. So that was actually just a positive way of saying that, yeah, that if it weren't for this technical glitch, but also showing that my equipment was truly, you know, a technological achievement, which it was, because of 98 other teams around the world, many of which were major corporations, I was the only person that actually came up with a natural source of energy that extracted water from the air. And so anyway, this is you could go into a lot of details, but the end result is right now I'm moving forward with the wing generator, the 10 kilowatt and the 50 kilowatt, which are product ready, manufacturing ready, and the water machines, which are already in production, manufacturing ready. And so I'm moving forward into the world of energy and water, and also water management, because with my water filter line, I also have a line of tanks and storage containers, and then also the atmospheric water generators, which can run off of the wing generator energy, and then the wing generator itself, the 10 kilowatt wing generator, I call the farm ranch model, and that will be ready to market. And these are relative to solar or three blade wind generators, these are extremely inexpensive. The wing generator itself is feather light. It's very responsive to the wind. And the one thing that's interesting is when people come over to look at it running, they're like, they just stand there and look at it with their mouth open. I wish I had a picture of the, you know, the all of the hundreds of people that have been to the site, and they come up and they look up and they just stand there and stare at it. And the people that know about energy, know about wind generation or solar, they look and they go, this is the solution. This is the solution to the world energy problem. So I have not talked about this because, of course, when you're doing something like this, it really all has to be pretty much behind the scenes, let's put it that way. You cannot make this public because you'd have chaos. It could evolve into something chaotic. So I had to keep all of this private. So now you know why I've been missing a bit here over the last year. It's been a lot of extremely, extremely difficult times trying to put this all together. But ultimately, like I was telling the staff at the XPRIZE and the judges and everybody else, that I said, well, deadlines are good because it pushed me to the limit. Literally, and I have a lot of capability, technical, physical, managerial capabilities, and it pushed me to the limit. But on that deadline, when it had to be ready, everything was up and moving, the wing generator, everything else. One thing you have to understand with any technical development, especially when you're dealing with prototypes and first off products, is that you have to be right on top of them because something can go wrong. You have to be able to bring it down, fix it, make it better, and that's part of the product development process. Because I don't care who you are, if you're, say, Elon Musk developing the Tesla automobile or whatever, they knew that they were going to have problems out of the gate. But they were there to fix them, and they were there for customer service, etc. So that's a big part of this also, is that moving into the future, solidify the product, get it out there, make it as simple as possible, make it as manufacturing ready as possible, and then be very available if and when a customer might have an issue. And even like right now, if you buy a car today, brand new car, you might be back in the shop in a month. Something isn't working right. It's a very complicated machine. All the little buttons and the bells and the whistles and they're very complicated machines. So service is one of the big things that you have to be right on top of. But the other thing is, I will say that my name and product and the wing generator and the water machines and my water filter line and my ability to manage projects, etc., is now world famous. It is well known around the world, and especially amongst people who are savvy to business and businesses in this region of commerce. So anyway, okay, I won't say too much more, but that is over now. But very happy to have come away And this is a big deal. This is the annual Technical Achievement Award from XPRIZE, and I won it for the wind generator and the water machine and the technical advancement of being able to come in under that price limit. That's literally, and when you think about it, just to come in with an energy machine that would produce that much energy for under the cap would be a major achievement. But also then have the water machines in that price that would extract that much water from the air. And by the way, it was amazing to see. These machines are have a high professional look to them. And when you turn them on and you open up the faucet coming out the backside of the machine and the water comes pouring out, it's a sight to see, I'll tell you. And this will help people around the world, poor people who don't have access to water. This is going to be a game changer, and for people without electricity in remote locations. Can you imagine putting a 50 kilowatt or larger wind energy system out in the middle of nowhere where they never had electricity before, or say a farm or a ranch where people now can start driving electric cars. And so people could, say, on a farm or a ranch, have all of the energy they need for milking a few hundred cows, plus have a couple of electric cars to run to town. No more gasoline, no more electric bill. These are huge cost savings. And that's one thing about the wind generator, is that the payback is very good. And that's why I know a lot of people that were in the old wind industry, the smaller wind generators, the companies making these went out of business because there was no payback. The cost versus the payback, the payback is based on the amount of energy that they produce economically. And the payback was 12 or 15 years, and a lot of times they broke down before that. So there literally was no payback. And so that whole region of wind energy went asunder. It just doesn't even exist anymore. The fact that solar, which only has a couple hours of viable time per day, the fact that that can beat wind generation is a joke. I don't know. I don't know how else to say it. The fact that that can beat wind generation for energy is ridiculous, but that's not true anymore. The wind generator blows them all away in cost, in performance, and in payback. And so the only issue is now that I want to move into the big wind generators, the big ones that would be for, say, car charging stations, or the big ones that eventually will replace nuclear and coal power plants. So that's where I'm putting my time and emphasis now, and still keeping me very, very busy. I will keep up with my show. And by the way, if you're on the paid cast list, I've missed a few of those lately. And so I will be making those up, because that is a very important part of my public statement of my work. Right now I'm involved in the paid cast of commentary on the various books that I've published. I'm still working through the weather book, which is right in the middle of the various set of books. Plus, I'm working on another book in the background. So not too many things going on here in J. McCanney Science, or JMCC Wing Land, if you want to call it that. Plus, by the way, I do have a new webpage for jmcanneyscience.com. It's almost ready to go online. We have all the content loaded, and we're just doing some reviews still to get it so that it's presentable, but a very nice modern webpage. So for all of this time, people have complained that my webpage is difficult to follow, which it is. Granted, it's built up over probably decades. And really, it is difficult to use. and follow. That'll be replaced very soon with a much modern look, a modern web page with SSL certificates, the secure socket layer, SSL. That's where you see the little lock up in the left-hand corner of your browser. It will have that, and of course, all of the sales page will be modern, you know, drop-down menus, etc. So it'll be much easier to follow. Anyway, and I want to really expand on my water filter sales into the, if you know people who are building homes or commercial markets, those are the people I want to expand into those markets, because nobody but nobody has the whole house filters and the small commercial filters that I sell. There's nothing on the market like them. So I'm going to do some work in expanding those markets. That's already going on in the background. So anyway, I'm hope I'm not boring you with everything that's going on here, but I wanted to bring everybody up to date, and especially the XPRIZE, which has been a phenomenally positive experience. Let me just put it that way. And in this event, there are no losers. There are only winners. Because ultimately, the people of the world, the poor people that don't have water or energy, are going to be the winners. That's what kept me going a lot of the time when, I'll tell you, I was down in the mud. It was like I was inside of a container sweating and, you know, just for days on end trying to get things fixed and set up and, you know, out in the hot sun doing this with, you know, minimal amount of help. Just really, really difficult. But that's what kept me moving. And, you know, at 70 years old, I should be out golfing, not doing this kind of thing, but this is what motivates me. There'll be time for golf someday soon, I hope, because in commercializing these, then those companies will be properly funded and commercialized. And also, if you know people out there who are interested in basically angel investors, turn them my way. Say, go over and talk to James McCanny there. You know, send me an email at the email web address and put me in communication with people that are serious investors. Just a quick summary. For the wing generator, there are 13 proposals on the table. They range from $4 million to $40 million for the various investment programs. So those are the kind of investment levels that I'm looking for to bring these different versions of the wing generator to production, to manufacturing and distribution. And so it, you know, it takes money. Going into the real world, and that's with, you know, complete with engineering staffs and marketing, etc. So if you know people who are registered certified investors, you know, send them this way. Say, this is a ground floor investment opportunity. It's been vetted. It's been sent through the ringer through various channels, and it's ready to roll. So anyway, okay, enough of that. There's a very interesting new comet that is approaching Earth. Now, this is not K2. I've talked about Comet K2. On previous shows, but this comet is called, let me get the name here, I have it written down, oh dear, Comet 46P Wirtman, and let's see, I'll have to check the spelling of this, but at any rate, here's a comet. It right now is in the distant solar system, and I have not had time to look at its orbital parameters, etc. So I'll probably include that next week. Was a little short on time this week with a lot of other things going on. But this comet is going to come within 11.5 million kilometers to Earth. Okay, now we're going to look at some numbers here, because the visible coma of this comet, and now let me explain, because you're not going to find this on any other web page. The visible coma, which is an indication of the Debye shielding. Now, when you have a negatively charged object, which comet nuclei are negatively charged, and I explain all of this in my books, how this process works. It's the discharge of the solar capacitor, and the negatively charged nucleus is what draws in the material. And by the way, just a caveat here, I saw an article recently, someone sent me, on the comet 67P, the one that the Rosetta mission landed on, and showed absolutely no snow, ice, water of any kind, and nothing coming off the nucleus. And the article was very mum, did not say anything about Dirty Snowball Comet model. And the French lead scientist, as I said in an interview at the Paris Air Show last year, admitted that the Dirty Snowball Comet model is absolutely incorrect. However, if you looked on spaceweather.com, which is a NASA mouthpiece, basically, it's owned by the Rothschilds, their comment was that this comet 46P Wertmann, which is coming into the solar system now, it says it was a furiously vaporizing nugget of dirty ice. Now, that rings completely of dirty snowball science. And of course, it's completely fairy tale science. Comets are not dirty snowballs. They never were. They couldn't have been in 1950 for many good reasons. When I was at Cornell in 1969 to 71, it was blatant that they couldn't be then. But here we are in the year 2018, almost over, and they're still trying to pound that ridiculous topic. So, you know, they're not going to go away. Standard science is going to stick to its guns, like that country western story about the guy who's that's my story and I'm sticking to it. Well, that's NASA. But anyway, here's the numbers. Here are the numbers related to this comet. First of all, it's green, which is interesting because green is kind of a Christmas color, and it's going to be coming by Earth 11.5 million kilometers away. Now, the distance, when things come close to the Earth, we typically think of them in terms of lunar distances, or LDs, they're called, lunar distances. The distance to the Moon in kilometers is about 384,000. The diameter of the planet Jupiter is 139,000, about a third of that. So if we were at the center of Jupiter, or if we put Jupiter, let's say, where Earth is and looked in terms of the Moon, it would be about a sixth of the distance to the Moon to the outer edge of the atmosphere of Jupiter. You know, that would give you a feeling for the size. Now, this comet is said to be, its coma, the visible coma, the Debye shielding coma, which is pretty much a perfect sphere, which is what you expect from Debye shielding. You expect a sphere. A lot of times these are not visible, only with infrared photography, etc. But this one is visible to the naked eye. It's in the color green. And so that is the inner layer of the Debye shielding. Those are the larger atoms, the carbons, that are being basically illuminated because of the electrical current passing through that region. So the real, and the real but invisible Debye shielding distance would go very much farther out from that, primarily made up of hydrogen. Excuse me. And that could be as much as many million kilometers. We don't know because nobody's measuring it, nobody's talking with the people that have the good equipment, the equipment that you and I paid for, but we never get to use or get to recommend how it is used. Okay, so anyway, this comet is coming close to Earth, very close to Christmas time. The question is, will we have an electrical interaction? Now, even if this object had a large nucleus, it would not affect us gravitationally, because it's certainly not going to have a nucleus that is planet or lunar sized. NASA is saying that the nucleus is a kilometer across, which I find highly unlikely. I've talked about this before, how they use the albedo method of measuring a comet. So they look at the amount of light coming off the comet nucleus and then make an estimate that that's coming from this white object. But if the object isn't white, if it's black, then it would take a much bigger surface to reflect that same amount of light. So the nucleus could literally be 1,000 kilometers in diameter, given the albedo method of measuring the nucleus size. Now, they can use radio waves to bounce off the nucleus, and it would give us an exact size, but of course they're doing that, but of course they're not telling us. They're using the albedo method, which they can slide by the general public, not by me, but by the general public, and get away with it. So we don't know how big this nucleus is. It could be small, but I doubt it. I think it's going to be quite a bit bigger. But the question, but there again, it's not going to have a significant mass at 11 million kilometers to cause any gravitational issues with Earth nor the Moon. Both the Earth and Moon will be very far away from this object gravitationally. But electrically, and there again, I'll look at this orbit for next week's show. I'll get some more details. I just didn't have time to get it together before this show. But I'll look at the orbit and see if there's any possibility of, number one, a broadside view to see if that during that time period there's any electrical discharges in the sunward direction. Will we be able to see it from the broadside, which will prove that it's, in fact, a sunward discharge? And the whole world will be able to see this thing. It should be visible to the naked eye. And also, you know, a lot of people will be out and around Christmas time, maybe traveling out in the country, stop at a wayside rest, you know, and get away from a little bit from the lights, and you'll be able to see this, and certainly with small binoculars. So the question is there going to be any electrical interaction with Earth? Could this help produce some serious storm activity around this time? Or is it going to be far enough away where there's no electrical interaction? Typically, comets electrically can be as much as 20 million miles. So it's not unheard of, and especially the fact that we already have an electrical discharge passing by Earth, and these electrical discharges tend to pull each other together. It's called the pinch effect. It's a magnetic effect of electrical currents. So Earth having its discharge of the solar capacitor, along with this comet having its discharge of the solar capacitor, could pull these two current sheets together to allow an electrical interaction between the comet nucleus and that region, that charged region around the comet nucleus where there's a Debye shield. If we can penetrate that Debye shielding, we very likely could see some fireworks in the sky. This would be very interesting to the whole world to look. And when people see that, they're going to go, you know, that ain't no little snowball up there. It ain't a snowball sending out electrical activity towards Earth. And so, anyway, this is very interesting. I find that this comet, once again called 46P Wertmann, is going to give us a little activity during Christmas time. And I've talked before about comet 67P, that it potentially could have some some issues when it comes into the solar system, maybe not with Earth, but possibly with Jupiter. And that would be interesting because we're going to have a ringside seat for that also. Okay, switching gears a little bit again. Now, I was not here. I missed this whole period with Hurricane Michael coming into Florida. But what is not normal, what is abnormal here, is that it went from a Category 1 hurricane just a little bit offshore, which most people thought Category 1 hurricane, hey, stay at home, have a party. All of a sudden, it turns into a Category 4 hurricane. And this is not normal. And we saw the same type of activity with the hurricanes in the Hawaiian Islands earlier in the fall. We saw the same activity with Hurricane Maria that hit Puerto Rico a number of years ago. The same with Hurricane Irma, late August of 2017. Which I happened to be in the path of at the time, if you remember that whole incident. But the idea of going from a Category 1 to a Category 4 hurricane in a half a day is not normal. So let me just put it that way. This is not a normal effect, nor is it attributable to warm water. There's not enough warm water there. In fact, the whole issue of warm water creating hurricanes is a myth. It's simply not true. The amount of energy, and it's a very simple energy calculation, the amount of energy in a hurricane versus the amount of energy lost when a hurricane passes over a warm body of water is the amount of energy lost from the ocean is minuscule compared to the total energy. Now, I saw an article that was in Physics Today was written by an MIT thermodynamics professor. And he gave all of the entropy solutions and all of the what he called thermodynamic rationale for hurricanes developing from warm water. But the one calculation he missed, which is something you absolutely always have to do, the first thing you learn in thermodynamics in college, at your very first exposure to thermodynamics, is you can do all your entropy and all of your, enthalpy and every other type of calculation you wish, but it has to be capped off by an energy calculation. And he just completely omitted it from this article, which was absurd, absolutely absurd. But the bottom line is that if you measure the surface temperature change of the ocean after a hurricane passes, I always give the example of an automobile going down the street. If you saw an automobile go down the street and you never really saw an automobile before or knew how it worked, you would see the exhaust coming out the back end, and you might think, oh, that's what makes the car go down the street. The exhaust comes out the exhaust pipe, it pushes the car down the road, and that's what makes the car go down the road. Well, if you went and measured the energy coming out, the velocity of the air and the quantity of the air, the mass of the air, and you compared that to the car going down the road that weighs, a ton or more of steel with people in it and all their stuff, you would realize that that could not possibly be the source of energy pushing the car down the road, and you'd have to come to the conclusion that there is some other major energy source within the car that is causing the car to go down the road, which you would be right. It would be called an internal combustion engine, and then you would realize that the byproduct of that internal combustion engine is the gas that's coming out the pipe. And you could do all of that without lifting up the hood. You could come to that correct conclusion. Likewise, if you're looking at a hurricane and somebody tells you, well, the hurricane is caused by warm water, there's two thermodynamic problems here. One is that you can't take latent energy, as would be the case in warm water, and organize it into a storm. It's not possible. And that's basically the third law of thermodynamics. The second and third law would both be violated by such a construct. And also, the biggest part is the energy. When you look at the drop in temperature and you calculate the amount of energy that comes off of the ocean, when a hurricane passes, it's about a zillionth of the energy in the hurricane. And so the conclusion you come to is that cooling is a byproduct of the hurricane passing, and that's what it is. The wind of the hurricane evaporates water off the surface of the ocean, and that's where the drop in temperature from the ocean comes from. It's the evaporation of the water, and that's where the water comes from, the fuel of clouds in the hurricane. So it all makes a lot of sense. But it's not the source of energy of the hurricane, and so that's when I, of course, realized this, that I discovered that the electrical discharge from the ionosphere is what is powering the hurricane. So to go from a Category 1 to a Category 4 hurricane in a matter of 12 hours is impossible unless you have a little assistance from our friends running the laser satellites. And so that's, you can look in my weather book, it discusses that. All of this clearly explained how this works with diagrams, pictures, and arrows, and text. So the complete explanation of the initial formation of the hurricanes and the production, and also the methods for manipulating hurricanes. And so very clearly, Hurricane Michael, one in a long, ongoing series of manipulated storms. Okay. So anyway, let me just backtrack about a minute to go in the show. Remember my webpage, jmccsci.com. That's the short version for jmccsci.com. But because most people misspell that somewhere along the line, I have the short version, jmccs, as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo, jmccsci.com. Go there, the webpage, the paid cast, the $3.95 per month for an extra deep dive into scientific topics that you will not hear anyplace else on the planet or even on this side of the universe, a weekly update, and also all of the archives for this radio show, and, of course, the sales webpage with all of the water filter items. I encourage people to look at the whole house water filters, the filter elements, the replacement filter elements you can get at a very good price when you buy them with the original purchase of the filter. So once again, welcome back. This is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.